Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
And I'm Alex.
And Jake is not with us again today. Unfortunately, he discarded the wrong card to tortured existence and is currently flogging himself as self-punishment. Jake will be back again with us next time.
Seems like he's been doing that for a bit.
Yeah, he'll be back, though. I have faith that Jake will be able to manage that one. So today we've got another more off-the-cuff episode. Alex and I are going to be working on a deck that I have for a long time wanted to brew, and that is Black-White Tribal Clerics. Alex, you got to see one iteration of this deck a long time ago when I had first Athreos, God of Passages, at the helm, and then later both Timna and the Ravos, Soul Tender, at the helm.
I definitely did, and this was one of those decks where you and I have some similarities, where it's kind of just like a machine in of itself, where, you know, we're trying to find the right pieces to fit to equal these same kind of synergies. And, you know, this is reminiscent of not only your original brews, but I think your ever and undying love for Scrap Trawler, I think, comes from this as well.
Oh my, yes. Oh my, yes.
So, I mean, I guess the first real question is, can we expect to see Scrap Trawler in this deck? Is that going to be a thing you try to make happen?
So there are potential lines with it. So one of the potential clerics that could work in the deck is actually a powerful piece of a Scrap Trawler line, and we will talk about that one in a little bit. So it's not off the table. I think it is less likely, and I don't think the deck is exactly what it wants to do, but it's a potential.
Well, that sounds a little that's like sacrilege, but that's fine.
That's so... okay. It's black-white clerics. They're probably by default a little bit sacrilegious.
That's true, in all fairness. So what are you looking to do with this deck? What would be the quadrant that you think it falls into?
All right, so before we talk about the quadrant, let me read the commander so we're all on the same page. So this is Aura, Skyclave Hierophant. This is a 3/3 legendary creature core cleric for 2, a white, and a black. It has lifelink. And whenever Aura, Skyclave Hierophant, or another cleric you control dies, return target cleric card with a lesser converted mana cost from your graveyard to the battlefield. So there are some definite similarities to our old friend Scrap Trawler, or my old friend Scrap Trawler, but there are also some significant differences. So in terms of what quadrant I'm aiming for, I am probably aiming this one to be somewhere between balanced and chaotic. So a balanced deck is where the vast majority of most modern commander decks will fall, which have reasonable consistency of establishing their resource base and their deck's engines, while tending away from high consistency win conditions. These decks also have an eye towards efficiency, but are willing to play spicier cards which fit the deck's goals. Which, I mean, that's clerics to a T. We're going to play some serious spice in this thing to hold the pieces together.
Yeah, that seems accurate. That seems like what clerics want to do.
Yep, and then a chaotic deck, which will heavily favor variety of gameplay over consistency, but will look to include some extremely efficient cards. These decks may feature a core game plan which is difficult to execute on, or even emergent combos with no tutors to select key pieces. Chaotic decks may also wind up in this quadrant if they have inherent weaknesses in the foundation of the deck which reduces its consistency, such as having difficulty with color fixing and the mana base. While they may include efficient cards, they lean heavily towards variety, meaning these decks are often at an appropriate power level for a game with more balanced decks. So I also kind of want to lean in this direction too, if only so that way I am not playing a deck that is loaded with tutors, which would also be kind of nice if I could have a deck that I do not have to take any cards out of my staples binder for, just so it's another one of my options for a deck that we can say, all right, we have time for another game tonight, what do we want to play? And I can just pull this deck out and have no prep work to do to get it ready to go.
Yeah, having adopted your strategy for a staples binder and having to constantly go into it between decks, I'm making less than optimized choices for some of the decks I'm building simply because I don't want to do that between games. I understand where you're coming from on that one.
Yeah, and I think at some point we probably should do an episode on the staples binder system. It's very similar to systems that shows like the Command Zone have talked about, but it is one that really lets you maintain a pretty vast library of decks. As I look over at my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 decks that are currently assembled. Yeah, it's kind of a nice thing. So maybe in the future we can talk about that.
Alrighty, so now we know what you kind of want to do with the deck in terms of its quadrants. What is the overall strategy that we're looking for here?
So a lot of times with Scrap Trawler decks, I have been leaning towards a focus type deck, but I think that this type of deck with Aura at the head is probably going to lean more towards value. So a value type deck will prioritize resource advantage over speed, optimizing for the long game. A value deck seeks to disrupt more focused opponents while creating and exploiting a resource imbalance to win. And in this case, that resource imbalance will be, my creatures just don't stay dead. You can blow up the board, I'm going to get a lot of creatures back into play, and then use that to start rebuilding much more quickly than anybody else is able to do.
Gotcha. All right, so we did talk a bit more, a bit earlier about Scrap Trawler and things of that nature, and I asked, you know, is this something that's going to be prevalent here in the deck? And you said some elements of it will be, but maybe not all of it. But I have played against iterations of this in the past. I've seen how one piece leads into another, leads to another, and then ultimately the game ends with you explaining to us how we now lose to your army of seemingly, you know, innocuous clerics. What lessons from Scrap Trawler have you kind of brought into this?
So Scrap Trawler has brought up some very interesting lessons, and as I was looking over cards for this list after Aura was spoiled, I came to the conclusion that artifacts are a lot better than clerics. Big surprise, a whole broad, colorless archetype of type of card is better overall than a very specific color-restricted subtype seen only on creatures. There are a lot more artifact-based combos that can just win the game on the spot, as you have seen with my dear friend Rakdos, Lord of Scrap, where Walking Ballista or Hangerback Walker can pretty much lead to just game-ending scenarios once I get those loops online. Spell bombs are also a fairly common way to just win the game in a Scrap Trawler-based deck. I have not really found any true just win-the-game combo that seems easy to set up in Cleric so far, but maybe we'll find what we're brewing today. Next, as we learned lessons from Merrin, so cards going directly into play are much better than cards going into hand. The nice part about this is a lot of Scrap Trawler loops are really reliant on cost reducers. One of the reasons why my Rakdos Lord of Riots deck works so well is that the deck does not really need anything else to go on because Rakdos does the cost reduction by himself, and he does so highly, highly efficiently. Those are kind of the main ones. One of the things the deck will need to bring over from a dedicated Scrap Trawler type deck is it still needs good sac outlets. So ideally finding sac outlets that synergize with what the rest of the deck wants to do is going to be important. And then in terms of tutors, as I mentioned, I was kind of hoping that the deck, having my value piece in the command zone as opposed to being somewhere in the deck, hopefully I can minimize tutors and instead lean on cards like Buried Alive as a potential way to start getting my value, as opposed to needing to run Demonic Tutor, Imperial Seal, Vampiric Tutor, and try to minimize that type of thing instead.
Gotcha. I mean, the games do feel a bit more nuanced when the tutors are a bit light on the ground. You draw more towards a card draw, assembling your engine as compared to look for this, look for that. Okay, game's over. Move on to the next one. Even though that is what some people enjoy, I don't think Cleric falls into that kind of game plan.
Yeah, I don't think, looking over the list of clerics on Scryfall, I don't think there's going to be a lot there that's really going to enable it. When I'm sitting here drooling over a potential 5-drop for the deck, I don't think it's going to be falling that into the optimized quadrant in any way, shape, or form. So speaking of which, I guess we should probably talk about how this crazy deck is going to win, and I don't know yet. I think that's one of the things we're going to have to brew around and try to figure out what is a potential way to win. Now, you played an Orzhov deck to very devastating effect in the past, and that was your original Taysa Orzhov Scion deck.
It was my Taysa Spirit Shotgun, as I called her. Taysa was definitely near and dear to me. She was actually a build that I picked up from a buddy of mine in North Carolina, and it did utilize... the deck itself didn't have any, okay, I land this card and then that's it, game over. That is the end of it. There was a lot in the way of I needed 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, multiple pieces to just create this intrinsic value, and eventually kind of lock out the game with the spirits and whatnot. One similarity that I see, just from the few cards that you have already on like a maybe board sitting there that were, you know, huge all-stars on Taysa, are your favorite pair of partner commanders.
So Krav the Unredeemed and Ragna the Redeemer. So one of the things that I'm looking at with this is that Krav and Ragna being the battle bond type partner, which was the type of partner with that was explored again in the Ikoria Commander 20 decks. So partner with has the advantage of a little bit of consistency, where if you draw either half of the partners, you can then on a ATB try to retrieve the other partner. So the less exciting of the two is Ragna the Redeemer. She is 5 and a white for a 4/4 legendary creature angel, and she partners with Krav. She has flying, and at the beginning of each end step, if your team gained life this turn, create 2 1/1 white warrior creature tokens. In standard Commander, that basically means if you gained life this turn, you get 2 1/1 white warrior creature tokens at end of turn. The real good part is Krav the Unredeemed. Krav the Unredeemed is 4 and a black for a 3/3 legendary creature demon. It partners with Ragna, and then his activated ability is black, sacrifice X creatures, target player draws X cards, and gains X life. Put X +1/+1 counters on Krav the Unredeemed. So it is a powerful draw engine, it is a powerful sac outlet, and notably the way the card is worded, you sacrifice X creatures, so you only require one colored mana to potentially sacrifice a number of creatures and get the ball rolling.
So it's a pretty beefy sac outlet, which a ton of upside, and a further upside is the fact that it's tutorable by another piece that actually synergizes very well with it. So it doesn't necessarily occupy a tutor slot, but it just also happens that it is tutorable.
Yeah, I found the partner with commanders to be very nice for that low-key hidden commander type card inside the deck, where you can fairly consistently bake in a game plan around them and have reasonable consistency if you have enough card draw or tutor effects to be able to get them online really easily. And I think what I'm going to shoot for with this deck is more effects akin to Krav, where I can draw a number of cards and exploit my creatures on the field, as opposed to tutors to try to get them out.
All right, and on that note, I think we should dive on in.
Yeah, so let's start brewing with this then. So in terms of things clerics do, one of the things I like to do when I'm trying to start brewing a new deck is I like to start at Scryfall or a similar search engine. The reason I like Scryfall best is it is probably a very powerful search engine in general. So what I will usually do in this case, I'm building a tribal deck, so I'll go to scryfall.com/advanced, and I will search under type line, I will type in cleric, which will allow me to search creature types. Then under commander color identity, I'm going to click on black and white. So I'll be searching for all clerics that are in the black-white color identity, which gets us 368 potential options. Spoilers, not all of these are actually very good options, as our first card is Abbey Matron, a card from Homelands, where it's 3 mana for a 1/3. I can pay white and tap it to give it +0/+3 till end of turn. I'm not planning on running a card like that, for example.
Cleric intensifies.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that we see kind of looking through the list is that Onslaught Block actually had a fairly strong black-white clerics theme, which introduces one of the cards that I think is kind of a must-have for clerics decks, and that card is Edgewalker. So Edgewalker is probably the single best cost reducer for clerics, and maybe one of the best cost reducers ever printed. Edgewalker is 1 a black and white for a creature human cleric. It is a 2/2, and it says cleric spells you cast cost white black less to cast. This effect only reduces the amount of colored mana you pay. And then the reminder text says, for example, if you cast a cleric spell with a mana cost of 1 and a white, it costs 1 to cast instead of 1 and a white.
It definitely seems like an auto-include, and it is one of the cards that recently spiked in price as soon as Zendikar Rise started getting spoiled.
Yes, it did.
Some of our other favorite clerics that exist through Magic, Shadowborn Apostle, looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I like to do when I'm deck building is I try and find a centralized focus that the deck is going to need, and then build that core and then work outwards. So one of the things that you mentioned was having sac outlets.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what a big part of what Aura wants to do is part of that. So we already talked a bit about Krav and Ragna, a sac outlet that's also tutorable. But we should, I think, maybe work from the lands up and talk about Highmarket and Phyrexian Tower.
All right, so let's pull these cards up then. I'm pulling up Highmarket now. This is a classic land. It taps for colorless. It comes into play untapped, and then it has an activated ability of tap, sacrifice a creature to gain 1 life. This used to be a fairly pricey card, but it managed to get itself reprinted a couple of times. It got the price down to a really reasonable level. If we decide to go in a life gain theme, this synergizes really well with what the deck is trying to do anyway, and it is an easy way to sacrifice. So yeah, I think that that's an auto include. I think
definitely
in a two-color deck especially, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the less flashier options that you can find in the land slot. Phyrexian Tower, the other card I mentioned, is a bit flashier as it generates mana and gets you that that sack trigger.
But yeah.
Both are definitely solid includes.
So Phyrexian Tower is a legendary land originally from Urza's Saga. It taps for a colorless mana, also comes into play untapped, or tap, sacrifice a creature, add double black to your mana pool. So it's a powerful ramp option as well. I think we're going to include both of those. Otherwise, the rest of my mana base that we're looking at so far is mostly just relevant two-color lands. All right, so sack outlets. So one of the things I like to do again is to kind of build off of the search I already have started here with clerics. So we can go for type clerics, commander, white, black, and then if we type in O, colon, which is going to be Oracle, it'll search the Oracle text. I'll type in sacrifice.
And I think your first result's going to be one of the cards that has made it into many of my lists, your list, Jake's lists, and never makes the final cut. But
Which one is that?
That would be Priest of the Forgotten Gods.
I think Priest of the Forgotten Gods may finally have her home here outside of your Brawl decks. So Priest of the Forgotten Gods is one and a black for a 1/2 creature human cleric. Its activated ability is tap, sacrifice two other creatures, any number of target players each lose 2 life and sacrifice a creature. You add black-black and draw a card. With the deck being a little bit slower, I don't think I mind having the activated ability needing to wait a turn cycle.
And it's value. Like, you want to be sacking, so it's not necessarily a detriment to you. It forces your opponents to have to sacrifice a creature, and in some cases it might be the only creature that they have. You do net mana, and you do net a card off of it. So.
Yeah, unlike in Limited, where creatures, edict effects like this tend to be very weak, because they're just going to lose their worst creature, which could be a token. Yeah, you might still run into that if we're standing across from the Dog and Cat deck, where they might just sacrifice one token and not be doing a lot of damage. But to Korvald decks, where they may have one or two creatures, it may only take enough, like, 2 activations to get rid of Korvald. Now, another one that actually comes up on the first line of potential creatures here is one that may play into both themes, and that is another legendary cleric, and that is Aili, Eternal Pilgrim. One and a white for a legendary creature, core cleric. She is a 2/3 with Death Touch. Activated ability reads, one, sacrifice another creature. You gain life equal to the sacrifice creature's toughness. Plays into what we want to do. Not the best at sack outlet, just because it requires a mana to activate it. But then its other activated ability is one a black and a white, sacrifice another creature, exile target, non-land permanent. Activate this ability only if you have at least 10 life more than your starting life total.
So yeah, it does cost mana, but on the flip side, it doesn't have to contend with like summoning sickness and things of that nature. So if
Aili
comes in later on in the game, you know, you might be able to sit there and, you know, bolster your life total with the one mana ability, or, you know, remove potentially problematic permanent with the 3. But it begs the difference. So the last one is life dependent. And
right.
I think of a lot of things, whenever I think of clerics, I think of moving pieces, kind of like the cogs in a clock. Everything moves to kind of tell you the time. One thing that does not come to mind is attacking.
Yes. And one of the ways that this type of deck seems like it could potentially win would be just going wide with reusable creatures. But when you look over the list of creatures that were falling into this this tribe, they are not aggressively costed. They are not aggressively statted.
And I don't think you want to waste slots on things to make them bigger. The Glorious Anthem, Achromas, and Marl kinds of effects don't really seem like they
fit. Yeah. And there's no clerics. There's no cleric lords like in other tribes like Merfolk or Zombies, where you slap it down, suddenly your dorky little 1/1s and 2/2s are now 3/3s and 4/4s, which can actually brawl. Yeah, I'm pretty sure at this point that is not going to be an option for this type of a deck. Which leads to other questions of what other ways can this deck potentially win?
First one that comes to mind, because I recently tried this in the Zendikar Rising Limited draft, is Drain.
So classic aristocrats.
Classic aristocrats. Yes, and more... So where do you draw the line between classic aristocrats and specifically Soul Sisters? Because those are going to be the...
Yeah, those are probably the two strongest effects in this tribe. So the Soul Sisters refer to cards like Soul's Attendant, Soul Warden, or the original two classic ones. These are one white mana each for 1/1 creature clerics, and they have an activated, they have a triggered ability that whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your into play, not just under your control, excuse me, you gain a life. These are cornerstone cards in my other Orzhov deck, which is Karlov of the Ghost Council, because that wants as many life gain triggers as you can potentially get. I was hesitating saying that this is the direction the deck wants to go, just because I already have another Orzhov deck that wants to do that. But you're right that it's one of the strongest themes in black-white clerics.
Yeah, I mean, this is, so this could be something for the deck to do as, hey, critical mass, because you mentioned your Karlov deck, but his version of critical mass is different. It's simply just gain life to put, you know, counters on Karlov or any other permanents you have and kind of go that route. It is unfortunate that black white is so limited in specific scopes from talking about tribal decks like clerics of what you can really do with it. Like I said, because I don't see a scenario where attacking is going to be a profitable thing with this deck.
Yeah, exactly. The other nice part about it with Soul Sister type effects, like Soul's Attendant, Soul Warden, other effects like Oriok Champion, which is another 1/1 human cleric for 2 white mana. It has protection from black and red, and whenever another creature enters the battlefield, you may gain 1 life. Just a slightly more protected Soul Sister. They are enter the battlefield effects, which means they actually will trigger immediately and get you paid off of aura. They don't trigger off themselves entering the battlefield, but being lower cost means they are often going to be very easy to get back out of the graveyard if our curve is going to be sitting fairly a little bit higher around 2 and 3 mana. So they're not hard to recycle once things get going again.
Then if you put effects in play, Veto of the Duskrows is one of the ones that comes to mind. Our new friend from M21, which reads, Vito's a vampire cleric, 3 mana for a 1/3. He has some text on there, but the most important line of text is, whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life.
Yes. Also does have the option to pay 3 and 2 black to give creatures you control lifelink until end of turn, so if there is an opening, you can just swing in and start poking somebody to gain a little bit of life and start triggering your life loss. It is still target opponent, which is probably just fine for the deck.
Yep,
we can probably whittle people down.
Yep, you pay 5 mana and you can get in a whopping 3 points of damage with your clerics.
Yep. So we have Oriok Champion, Soul Warden, Soul's Attendant as our Soul Sisters. We have Edgewalker as our cost reducer. We have Aili Eternal Pilgrim. We have Regnite and Krav as our potential sack outlet duo. And we have Veto, Thorn of the Dusk Rose as a potential aristocrat's payoff. Payoff for life gain and slow drain.
Gotcha. All right. So if we're going to go that route, then it is worth... So some of the things I've come to realize in our playgroup is recently, it's like you can build the deck to be tuned and, you know, be casual, not quite CDH. And I guess the unwritten rule is you can have one, possibly 1.5 redundant ways to kind of just end the game right here and now, just in the event you kind of come into that. I was trying to walk that fine line with Winota, where I'm just like, okay, I've got one infinite combo I can go with this and see how it goes, but it didn't really feel good to everybody else at the table aside from me playing. But I think this one has a bit more of a direct way of doing it, and that's the Sanguine Bond combo.
Yeah, I think that's one I'm going to put in the maybe board for now. I don't know if I'm going to put in the tutors for it. The redundant creature effects for it do exist. I'm not sure how eager I am to tutor them up, or how many slots I want to dedicate to it, but I'm going to put it in the maybe board for now, because that does just end the game. So Sanguine Bond is 3 and 2 black for an enchantment. Whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. So it is a redundant effect with Veto, Thorn of the Dusk Rose. And then Exquisite Blood is what you can hear me typing on my clickety-clack keyboard now. And that is 4 and a black for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent loses life, you gain that much life. What this means is these two triggers will just go on the stack endlessly until you have drained the entire table out.
And at which point in time, Vito's target opponent one doesn't necessarily matter anymore because you're just shocking the table.
Correct.
You do mention tutors, though, and as it happens, there is one very specific enchantment tutor that also happens to be a cleric that also happens to need to die in order to search for it.
And that would be Academy Rector that Alex is referring to. This is
Long
time, powerful, classic card. Academy Rector is 3 and a white for a creature human cleric. She is a 1/2. When Academy Rector is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, so when she dies, you may remove Academy Rector from the game. If you do, search your library for an enchantment card and put that card into play, then shuffle your library. So the reason that might sound so funny to modern ears is this is from one of the Urza's block, and I never remember which one. It is Urza's Flask. And I don't remember which set that was, because I quit playing thanks to Urza's Gears. That is certainly an option here. I'm going to put her into the main board. So her ability is not a replacement effect. It is actually a trigger in response to her dying. So she will still trigger any dies triggers as a 4-mana creature with aura. She will get back probably most of our relevant creatures out of the graveyard. So she does multiple things. Even if we choose not to put in Exquisite Blood Sanguine Bond, it still is a way for us to get potential value. And we may decide we want to throw in more powerful enchantments into the deck anyway. And I currently don't have a home for my Academy Rector, so this would not be a bad place to put it.
So, all right.
Go ahead.
Another one that comes to mind, and this goes more than maybe board, but it's the fact that I found powerful. Granted, Brawl is a significantly more limited format than Commander is, but I've been pleased with it, and it kind of fits into the whole life aspect of it. And that is Sorin Vengeful Bloodlord, the legendary planeswalker from War of the Spark. It is 4 mana for a 4/2 planeswalker. It is a 2, a black and a white. It's generic plain text. Its static ability is, as long as your turn, creatures and planeswalkers you control have lifelink. His +2 is Sorin Vengeful Bloodlord deals 1 damage to target player and or planeswalker, such as a good way to ping for life.
Mm-hmm.
His minus X, however, is return target creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield, where X is this creature's a vampire in addition to its other types. So Sorin comes in at 4 and ticks up for 2. So mm-hmm. by the second turn, he can go ahead and, you know, -5, -6 to get something quite large out of the graveyard. That seems unlikely, given the converted mana cost of most clerics.
Right. It seems like he's fairly easy to just use as a reanimate effect.
Exactly. And one that, for the most part, as far as planeswalkers go, really aren't that threatening. Because he's like, all right, he's going to ping me for 1, things get lifelink, whoop-de-doo. Oh, he's mm-hmm. going to get his, you know, his 1 CMC cleric out of the yard. Like, what's that possibly going to do? Like, the amount of times I've played him in Brawl and just brought back a healer's hawk, and it just gets ignored, it's kind of just what put me on to this train of thought of, you know, we're looking at life gain, we want to bring things back from the graveyard, since that's kind of like the other aspect of the deck, it might be worth considering.
Yeah, now if we go that route, there actually is, Sorin kind of then wants us to go a little bit wider, if that is something we want to focus on. And there are a number of clerics which create tokens. For example, one of the cards that's shown up in pre-constructed decks a number of times is, oh, where are you? Da-da-da-da-da.
New Angel Cleric?
Not Angel Cleric, Demon Cleric. Skurzdag something? High Priest? Okay, Skurzdag High Priest. It is 1 and a black for a creature human cleric. It is a 1/2 with Morbid. The activated ability is tap. Tap 2 untapped creatures you control. Create a 5/5 black demon creature token with flying. Activate this ability only if a creature died this turn. There is also the number of different angel clerics that have come out recently, one of which came out in M21, which was Starlet Cleric or something like that.
Something...
This, by the way, is kind of how our brews go, everybody. We are not going to be editing this down too much. You're going to hear us mumbling to each other and saying, was it this? What was it? How did it work again? What was that card called? We do not have every card in the game memorized by a long shot.
As much as we've tried.
Yep. And the card was Speaker of the Heavens. It is 1 white mana for a 1/1 human cleric with lifelink and vigilance. Tap, create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. Activate this ability only if you have at least 7 life more than your starting life total, and only at any time you could cast a sorcery. I think I'm going to put those two in the maybe board for now. There are a few other clerics who will get you a demon token or get you an angel token. Some of them are really overcosted for what they're doing.
Speak of the Heavens is very, like, it's a 1-mana 1/1 with vigilance and lifelink. So it comes in early, it can attack, it can gain life, it can get us towards that goal. The only created you can cast a sorcery is, you know, unfortunate. But 7 life isn't too much to ask for in regards to that. So in terms of being on rate and on value for a repeatable effect, it's solid.
Yeah, exactly. I really don't mind that. Skira's Dagg High Priest, I'm going to put into the maybe board as well, depending on whether we're going to wind up going wide or not. Now, another option that we have is actually a card that I know that you love kind of to death, and that would be the New Heliod as a potential life gain payoff.
Definitely. New Heliod is just so stupid in the best way possible.
Yeah, Heliod Suncrowned is a legendary enchantment creature, god for as a 5/5 with indestructible. As long as your devotion to white is less than 5, Heliod isn't a creature. Whenever you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature or enchantment you control. And then one and a white, another target creature you control gains lifelink until end of turn. So turns on life gain, pays you off for life gain, does eventually offer the potential to just go wide enough where I guess in theory I may not need to necessarily drain everybody out to win. I might be able to get my dorky creatures threatening enough to go for a win that way.
I mean, even if they become like 4/4s, I mean, that's still something.
Yeah, that's still enough to probably run over most modern creatures. Like, back in the day, I would have called a 4/4 like a middleweight in Commander. But 4/4s are, as Commander has gotten more efficient and creatures have trended downward in size, as dorks have become more prevalent, I feel like a 4/4 is like a heavyweight these days.
Yeah. So one of the ones, and this comes to us from the next two I'm thinking of as I look through this list, come from Zendikar Rising. One of them is just a little common. It is Marauding Blight Priest. It is a 3/2 vampire cleric for 3. And it simply reads, whenever you gain life, each opponent loses 1 life. Never mind, because that's just 1 life. That's too limited.
Yeah, disregard. It's only the first life each turn, isn't it?
Yeah. It would have to be different instances of it.
Is it instances of life gain?
Whenever you gain life, each opponent loses 1 life.
So stagger
that.
It's not bad.
It's not
because
great
a lot of but a lot of the life gain is going to be 1 in increments of 1. So for example, if I have that and 2 Soul Sisters out, I play that, I then will have 2 life gain triggers. I will then drain each opponent for 1 life each time. I'll maybe board it for now. We don't have to take anything out of the maybe board. We don't want to.
The other one is also from Zendikar Rising. I just want to see someone die to this, in all honesty. It is a 5-mana flying angel cleric 2/6. That is Angel of Destiny. So Angel of Destiny is a flying double strike. Its first block of text is pretty interesting. Whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you and that player each gain that much life. Importantly, this isn't listed as lifelink.
Okay.
The second half is, at the beginning of your end step, if you have at least 15 more life than your starting life total, each player Angel of Destiny attacked this turn loses the game.
That's kind of silly. It's a potential win con. I don't know if I actually want to buy this dumb thing, though. I'll put it in the maybe board for now, too.
I want to see someone lose to it. Like, I want to be like, here's my dopey little 2/6. But on the side note, like, aside from that second fact where it's like, oh, by the way, if I attacked you, I don't have to deal combat damage. I simply just have to swing at you.
Right.
You lose the game. But the first one is interesting, where it's like, it gives all your creatures kind of pseudo lifelink, where they deal combat damage, you gain life, your opponents gain that much life, and then out of nowhere, you just kind of just like an Angel of Destiny. I know, I think it'd be super funny.
It would be super funny. I also tend to prefer if I'm going to include a win condition, I want it to kind of eliminate the table instead of eliminating one person. My least favorite games of Commander are when one person gets eliminated kind of early-ish and then the game grinds to a halt. So one person is sitting there scratching their heads waiting for the game to end so we can get another game going. Just like a personal preference, I don't think it's a power level thing necessarily.
No, that's fair. You're not incorrect about it.
Yeah.
I just want to see it.
No, that's also fair. Now, a couple other cards that could kind of fit in the deck. One option is my former commander for this type of deck, and that will be Athreos, God of Passage, another legendary enchantment creature god. It is a 5/4 indestructible creature. As long as your devotion to white and black is less than 7, Athreos isn't a creature. And whenever another creature you own dies, return it to your hand unless target opponent plays 3 life. So this one also, it will still get a death trigger off of Aura. So let's say that a 3-mana cleric dies. It will then trigger the Scrap Trawler type effect to return a 2-mana cleric from my graveyard to the battlefield. And then the opponent then has to tell me, are you going to pay 3 life, or are you going to let me have my 3 mana cleric back in my hand as well?
It definitely seems solid. Like, I've been on the receiving end of an Athios deck before, and it's never pleasant. And it just, it happens that the Athios triggers tend to deal more damage than the actual clerics themselves do.
Yeah, and eventually, so famously, Josh Lee Kwai from the Command Zone spiked the prices of a card I was hoping to see reprinted in the set but weren't pre-printed, Shadowborn Apostle, with his Athreos God of Passages deck, where he used Shadowborn Apostles to great effect, and he explained that as a really useful tool to try to put somebody in the Athreos box where their life total is so low they essentially don't have a choice. That is certainly an option with this style of a deck, especially if you go for life gain, life loss type shenanigans. And Athreos, just because it doesn't work against Aura, it seems like it's another way to give you free card advantage that the deck may not have access to otherwise. Now, another oldie but a goodie that could potentially go into this deck is Rotlung Reanimator from back in Scourge. So, Onslaught. So, Rotlung Reanimator is 2 and a black for a 2/2 creature zombie cleric. Whenever Rotlung Reanimator or another cleric is put into a graveyard from play, you create a 2/2 black zombie creature token.
That seems like it'd be a good one.
It seems to do a lot of what the deck wants to do anyway, where it will get you paid just from sacrificing. No additional cost is really needed. It gives the option to go wide, so it does enable effects like Heliod. It does enable potential wins off of cards like Sorin. I have to say, too, Planeswalkers seem like an interesting direction for the deck, if only because Planeswalkers, it seems really easy to protect Planeswalkers when you don't care about your largely inconsequential dorks who can just stand in front of them and you can throw them away all day.
Yeah, and they just come back.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So if we're going on the, you know, protecting the Planeswalkers plan, and also, generating that fodder for Heliod, Oketra's Monument.
I don't mind Oketra's Monument. So that is 3 mana. It is a legendary artifact. White creature spells you cast cost 1 less to cast, and whenever you cast a creature spell, create a 1/1 white warrior creature token with vigilance. It really only combos with Athreos, because eventually you can have a lot of your white creatures costing nothing to play from your hand.
It's just more to generate board presence. So if, you know, you want to generate something from Phyrexian Tower or High Market or any of those sac outlets, instead of sacrificing a cleric, if you don't want to do it right then and there, you have a whole bunch of these little fodders to kind of throw at it.
True.
I mean, it's a good maybe board one, because some of the clerics are either, you know, just a 1 white or just double white in the pips. So it might not actually make a whole lot of difference. But just having them on the board, just generating incremental value. Plus, they're more bodies to sacrifice to Krov.
Let's take a look then. For sac outlets currently, we have Eili, that is 1. We have Krov, that is 2. We have
Priest of Forgotten Gods.
That's 3. That is not enough sac outlets. I feel like we probably want to wind up somewhere around 8.
And then
7, 8.
Tower and High Market, so we're at 5.
All right, so we're at 5, true, with the land base. So we probably want at least 3 more good sac outlets. In terms of sac outlets that are also clerics, we're probably not going to see a lot of them.
What clerics
want to die?
There is a 1 cleric sac outlet that comes to mind that I've used to great effect in my Taysa deck. That is Withered Wretch.
Withered Wretch? Hold on a second here. Do you have that Withered, one up?
I do. Withered Wretch is a double black for a 2/2 creature zombie cleric.
Okay.
1 mana, exile target card from a graveyard. It's also, incidentally, graveyard hate.
But it's not a sac outlet.
You exile a card from a graveyard. No, never mind. Sorry, yeah. I thought you had a sacrifice.
I mean, it's still a good card, but I want to look at sac outlets now, because I think we want to bump that number up if we're going to go this way.
I'll redeem myself. It's an enchantment. Etchings of the Chosen. So it's a 3-mana enchantment. 1, a black and a white. Etchings of the Chosen. To the battlefield, choose a creature type. Creatures of the Chosen type get +1/+1. 1 mana, sacrifice a creature of the Chosen type. Target creature you control gains indestructible to end of turn.
All right, so it does offer the option to protect commanders, protect key combo pieces. It doesn't protect against exile type effects, but it will save them from wrath type effects. This deck is probably fairly happy to wrath the board in all honesty. Because just because we get so much value back right away. Yeah. I'm going to put this in the maybe board for now. But that potentially then brings us up to six fairly solid. Now I'm going to put it right in the main board actually. And I'm going to say that brings us up to six fairly decent sac outlets.
Speaking of fairly decent, there's another inconsequential one that's also a cleric. It's a 4 mana for a 2/4 human cleric. Protection from humans. Pay 1 life, sacrifice on the creature. Put a -1/-1 counter on a target creature and draw a card. And then 2, discard a card, proliferate. And
of course, if no one else recognizes that, yeah, that's Yawgmoth for and position. Incidentally, a cleric. Yeah, I think I will pull my copy of Yawgmoth out of my... my Sir Conrad League of Villains deck and put it into this deck instead. Geez, that is such a powerful sac outlet.
Incidentally, card is super busted.
Yeah, and incidentally, if we decide... I'm just going to put Heliot into the main board at this point because it you do have the option then to grow your other creatures, grow any planeswalkers you're playing once they have +1/+1 counters on them. So it does have the backup plan of just going over everybody else.
And the fact that it's sac outlet is based off of life.
Yeah. Yep. God, that's perfect for this deck. Yeah. All right, so let's try and find one more good sac outlet. Searching for cleric and sacrifice, there's a fairly strong one that I don't think is going to be a sac outlet, but is just strong for this type of deck in general, and that is Selfless Spirit. So yes. Selfless Spirit is 1W for a 2/1 flying creature spirit cleric. It has... sacrifice Selfless Spirit. Creatures you control gain indestructible till end of turn. This card is just good. It will protect you when you are not ready to see the board wiped. It will, at will, essentially get you back a key one drop. Yeah, I'm in for that one. But what other sacrifice do we have? All right, so one option from Onslaught Block is Cabal Archon. It is 2W for a 2/2 creature cleric. Black, sacrifice a cleric. Target creature loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. Kind of middling, but illustrated to great effect by Pete Ventners.
I think we might have to lean back on the oldie but a goodie here, and just go with the. It's on the tip of my tongue because I've used in pretty much any deck that it exists in.
Viscera Seer.
Yep.
Yeah, 1 black mana for a creature, Vampire Wizard. It's a 1/1 sacrifice a creature, scry 1. It just the consistency is so good. I don't think we care that it's off tribe.
Yeah. So it's one of the interesting ones, and it's not a sac outlet. It's just kind of valued. I don't know if it fits, but it's... I've been looking for ways to kind of possibly include cards from the Aquaria Commander decks, which mm-hmm. are largely overshadowed by, you know, the commanders in the Commander decks, mm-hmm. and or the Commander free spells like Deflecting Swat and whatnot. And this one is Species Specialist. It is okay. a 4-mana, 2/3 human warrior. Species Specialist enters the battlefield, chooses your creature type. Whenever a creature of the chosen type dies, draw a card.
Yeah, that's not bad. 4 mana for one of these effects is a little bit overcosted. I'm going to maybe board it for now, because there are cheaper versions of this. This effect usually costs 3 mana in black. But let's put that in the maybe board for now. Importantly, though, I think we're getting closer to that nice 8 package for sacrifice effects, which should be fairly consistent. And I think we are also missing one of the recent clerics from the new Zendikar set with Cleric of Life's Bond. It is the 2/2 Vampire Cleric. Whenever another cleric enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 1 life. So classic Soul Sister. And whenever you gain life for the first time each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Cleric of Life's Bond. So this should kind of fit both ways.
Yeah. Oh, if we're talking about Zendikar Rising, there's the Demon Cleric, Tabarax... Hope's Demise.
So Tabarak Hope's Demise is 2W for a legendary creature demon cleric. It is a 2/2 with flying. Tabarak has lifelink as long as it has 5 or more +1/+1 counters on it. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, put a +1/+1 counter on Tabarak. If that creature was a cleric, you may draw a card. If you do, you lose 1 life. That is going to go into the deck. It's one of the cards I am going to be ordering.
Yeah, I mean, I still have 2 boxes I need to open once they arrive, so don't jump too far ahead, because if I get a spare, I'll just give it to you.
Word. Okay. So, speaking of card draw, that is something we do need to address with any deck. at the moment, we are looking at card draw off of Yawgmoth and Tabarax. These are essentially death triggers, and then potentially cards like Species Specialist. Card selection off of cards like Viscera Seer. But there are some pretty good card draw options in Clerics, like Bygone Bishop, of which I managed to get the artist to sign a couple for me.
That was one of the ones we went
Jason
to.
Engel, yeah. So Bygone Bishop is 2 and a white for another 2/3 creature with flying spirit cleric. Whenever you cast a creature spell with converted mana cost 3 or less, investigate. So importantly, it does not trigger off of your creatures coming back from aura, but it would trigger off of creatures being cast again that have been returned to your hand with an effect like Athreos or another Raise Dead type effect.
That would work. Another one that comes to mind off the top of my head. Mangara, the Diplomat, Human Cleric. Yeah.
Mangara is good. So Mangara the Diplomat is 3 and a white for a legendary creature, Human Cleric. It is a 2/4 with lifelink. Whenever an opponent attacks with creatures, if 2 or more of those creatures are attacking you and or planeswalkers you control, draw a card. Whenever an opponent casts their second spell each turn, draw a card. The second is probably going to happen more often than the first, but this is another source of card draw. It is on a cleric. It has a life gain trigger. That seems good for this deck.
And it's got a big butt.
It does have a big butt. I cannot lie.
And sticking with our theme of things, it blocks Timna, who, Timna is also a cleric.
Yep. I was actually looking at putting both Timna and Ravos as potential inclusions in the deck. So Timna is 1 a white and a black for a 2/2 legendary creature, human cleric. She has lifelink, and at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, for each opponent you have dealt combat damage to this turn, you may pay 1 life. If you do, you may draw a card. It is super good. And that would kind of push this deck to be a little bit more aggressive, which could be interesting. I'm going to put her in the maybe board at least. Ravos, I think, though, probably has a home no matter what in this level of deck. So Ravos Soul Tender is the lesser known of the two Orzhov partners from the original Commander 2016. Ravos is 3 a white and a black for a 2/2 legendary creature, human cleric with flying. It's an anthem. Other creatures you control get +1/+1. And at the beginning of your upkeep, you may return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. So it is another copy of an effect called Oversold Cemetery, which was an enchantment which had the same effect for 1 and a black. Oversold Cemetery, there need to be at least 4 creature cards in your graveyard. So that's another form of card draw, which is nice.
Let's see what else. What else?
So that brings us up to a total of 21 creatures. For card draw, we have 1 off of Yawgmoth, 1 off of Bygone Bishop, 1 off of Mangara. That will be 4 off of Krav.
Priest of the Forgotten Guards draws
a card. Priest of Forgotten Card draws a card. That's 5. Tabarax can draw a card. That is 6. We probably want to be closer to like 10 pieces of good, reliable card draw. One potentially thematic thing we could run in this deck would be the God Eternal Bantu.
Yes.
You summon a dark god and terrible things happen to you. God Eternal Bantu is a legendary creature zombie god. It is a 5/6 with menace for 3 and 2 black. When God Eternal Bantu enters the battlefield, sacrifice any number of other permanents, then draw that many cards. And when God Eternal Bantu dies or is put into exile from the battlefield, you may put it on top of its owner's library, 3rd from the top.
So what you're saying is you can play it, sacrifice a bunch of creatures to it, draw a bunch of cards, then sacrifice it itself, only to draw it again 3 turns later and repeat the process.
Yes. So potentially reusable card draw that's actually on theme for the deck. All right, I will pull that out of Sir Conrad as well.
You know, it'd also be nice to see this next card outside of, Breakfast Hulk.
All right, what's that?
Children of Corlys is a... So, I had a Rebel deck at one point in time, which I loved. Children of Corlys is a 1-mana, 1/1 human Rebel cleric. Sacrifice Children of Corlys. You gain life equal to the life you lost this turn.
That is a mainstay. I'm running that in my Karlov deck as well. It seems fairly easy way to bounce back from taking a bunch of damage. It seems
I want to see it paired with, like, part of the Sanguine Bond combo, where it's just like, oh, you know, if you gain life target, if you lose that much life, but you don't have the life gain effect, you take a ton of damage, and then, surprise, or you just use it to come back from a turn where you just went a little overboard with Yawgmoth.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we probably just want some bread and butter card draw as well in this. Village Rites, I think, makes the cut in this type of deck.
Ancestral Recall in black? Yeah.
Yeah, so one black mana instant. Has an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice a creature to draw two cards. It's not quite Ancestral Recall, but it's still very good. We probably also just want some simple classic cards like Sign and Blood, just to get cards back in hand when things are not going well. Read the Bones.
So
they may be cuts later on.
It's unfortunate, but it's funny that there was a cycle of mentors in Ikoria where, you know, when they come into play, put a +1/+1 counter on, you know, a non-human creature, and then, you know, mm-hmm. you pump into that, and it, you know, it gets bigger and whatnot. They're all clerics, but they can't put their effects on other humans, which
mm-hmm. you know, which is what this deck's going to be centered in. There'll be a few zombies, but oh well. So at this point, then, that's putting us around 8 card draw spells. We probably want a couple more, but we're moving in the right direction with it. We're really solidifying around the Soul Sisters type theme at this point, because now we have 4 clerics that will pay us life when creatures enter the battlefield, fairly common. We have a number of lifelink sources which will synergize with Heliod to provide a backup pump type win condition for the deck, where we can eventually just build up and go over everybody else. We have a few good, we're up to 8 sacrifice outlets, so we're in pretty good shape there. Maybe we do potentially lean a little bit more into Orzhov Super Friends, just because we just dare people to come in and attack us. And we have so many chump blockers.
It's definitely a consideration.
What other Orzhov Planeswalkers are there? I haven't really looked in this color identity for Super Friends.
Normally when I think of Planeswalkers that are commander viable, the first one, and pretty much the only one that ever comes to mind off the bat, is Elspeth, Sun's Champion. It is a 6-mana Planeswalker. It's a 4 in white-white. Her +1 puts 3 1/1 white soldier creature tokens onto the battlefield. I think her -3 destroys all creatures with power 5 or greater. And then her emblem, which I believe is on 7 or 8, all creatures you control get +2/+2 and gain flying.
That'll basically hit, the Wrath will hit basically none of my creatures. Putting creatures onto the battlefield will probably get me a couple of life gain triggers. And it does have a win condition staple to it. Sure, I'll put that one in. I don't think we go heavy with Super Friends, but Elspeth seems like a pretty good place to bank our mana.
If left alone,
mm-hmm.
and she ultimates, that's just that guarantees that every one of your creatures is a 3/3 flying evasive threat.
Right, which will push us a little bit more towards going a little bit on the wide side, which I don't mind. Rotlung Reanimator kind of supplements that by giving us extra creatures to go wide with. And then we have the backup plan of draining people out with veto-type effects. And veto's probably not going to be hard to get out of the deck. I'm just going to throw in Buried Alive now as my one real tutor that just synergizes with what the deck wants to do. So currently, skipping over the 11 lands we've talked about so far, we are at 32 cards. We're probably going to wind up somewhere around 62 to 65 cards at the end. So we're about halfway there at the moment. We are short on removal, though.
Oh, luckily there's a ton of that in black and white.
Yes, there is. And one potential option that we can use that is extremely powerful with where our deck is looking so far would be an effect like Retribution of the Meek.
Or its more popularly known cousin, Dusk and Dawn.
Yes, I'm going to think both of those are going to go in here. So Retribution of the Meek is a sorcery from Visions. It costs 2 and a white. Bury all creatures with power 4 or greater, which just means destroy, they cannot be regenerated.
Yeah, that was two all-time favorites of my own Taste of deck.
And Dusk Till Dawn is one of my just favorite Wraths ever printed. And Dusk, it's one of those Aftermath split cards from Amonkhet. The Dusk part is 2 white-white, destroy all creatures with power 3 or greater. And then Dawn is 3 white-white with Aftermath, so you can only cast the sorcery from your graveyard. Return all creature cards with power 2 or less from your graveyard to your hand. Just another way to re-up if you run into trouble.
What about Citywide Bust?
I don't know that one offhand. I gotta look it up.
It is a 3-mana, 1 white-white, destroy all creatures with toughness 4 greater.
It's actually gonna hurt us a little bit more. I don't mind it just to have another cheap board wipe in the deck in those colors, because toughness is actually something the deck has in spades. less so than power. Yeah, I don't mind. That sounds good. Let's put that in for now.
Off the
so
cuff,
we have a number of selective board wipes so far that our deck is happy with.
And that can be one of the ones we drop. Because, I mean, there are four creatures that get hit through that. Cycling back real quick to card draw.
Mm-hmm.
Mentor the Meek.
Mentor the Meek's a good card. I don't like to pay for my card draw if I can help for it.
True, but almost 80% of the cards, maybe 90% of the cards, trigger it.
Mm-hmm. And it's on enter the battlefield, not just cast. So put that in for now. We probably want some point removal, so swords to plowshares.
Anguished Unmaking.
Yep. Anguished Unmaking. So Anguished Unmaking is one a black and a white for an instant. Exile target non-land permanent. You lose 3 life. Yeah, happy to pay that.
And then that's probably it's lesser cousin Vindicate, destroy target permanent.
Yep, same mana of which I get to use my silly Amonkhet Invocation one of Bantu and God Eternal and Ketra just ganking somebody. That art is so pretty. The frame is not. All right, and probably want to just run Path to Exile as well.
Yeah.
Since we're in white in terms of other good board wipes, even if it costs a lot of mana, we probably run Austere Command.
Yeah, Austere Command is incredibly situational.
And incredibly perfect for what we're doing here. So Austere Command is 4/2 white for a sorcery. Choose 2. It is a modal card. The options are destroy all artifacts, destroy all enchantments, destroy all creatures with converted mana cost 3 or less, and destroy all creatures with a converted mana cost 4 or greater. We're probably going to be choosing the last mode most commonly, but I'm happy with that. Let's throw that in there.
Since white does have a unique niche in what it can do in terms of board wipes, mainly recovering from them in some ways. So in that sense, I'd like to put forth Rally the Ancestors.
Ah, yes, Rally the Ancestors. So Rally the Ancestors is a classic card from Fate Reforged. It is 2 white mana and X for an instant. Return each creature card with converted mana cost X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Exile those creatures at the beginning of your next upkeep and exile Rally the Ancestors. Importantly, it does not say you have to exile the creatures if they leave the battlefield for any other reason.
I pay 4. Here's my board.
Yep. So we can throw that into as another get-out-of-jail-free card. Saving the deck again, that brings us up to 42 cards. We have a fairly tight theme at the moment with life gain. So one good old-fashioned pet card I have that I kind of might want to throw in here.
Is it Aetherflux Reservoir?
It's a possibility. I was actually looking at Archangel of Thune. So Archangel of Thune is an angel for 3 white-white. It is a 3/4 creature angel with flying and lifelink. Whenever you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So another option to end the game by going wide.
How many creatures do we have at 1 CMC?
At 1 CMC, we have Children of Corlys, we have Soul Warden, we have Soul's Attendant, and we have Viscerous Seer. It's not quite enough. We probably want a couple of other cheap creatures.
I'm only asking because at one point in time, Ranger of Eos becomes very good.
Probably going to go into the deck. Let's include Weathered Wayfarer as another one mana cleric. It is a 1/1 for 1 creature human nomad cleric. White tap, search your library for a land card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Pay this ability only if an opponent controls more lands than you. We're the Orzhov deck. They're going to have more lands than us.
Speaking of that, and it's worth inclusion on any deck that doesn't necessarily run green and runs white, Lantax.
Lantax, yeah. Lantax is in. It is 1 white mana for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, if opponent controls more lands than you may search your library for up to 3 basic land cards, reveal them, put them into your hand. If you do, shuffle your library. We're in a low color count deck. Yeah. That's going to go in. We're really filling out nicely at this point. We probably want like 1 or 2 more good one drops. Oh, actually, another lesson from Scrap Trawler that is important. you do want to have redundancy for getting cards back from your graveyard. Because although Aura is in your command zone, you can eventually be wiped. Your board can be wiped enough that coming back becomes difficult. Ravos is a potential late game way to just start slowly clawing back into the game. There
Phyrexian
is
Reclamation.
Phyrexian Reclamation is an option. I was actually looking at Doomed Necromancer. So Doomed Necromancer is 2 and a black for a creature, a 2/2 creature, human cleric mercenary. Black, sacrifice Doomed Necromancer, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
It's strong. It's a one-off, but it is strong.
It is strong. And then potentially, I think for the maybe board, Whisper, Blood Liturgist, is another cleric who is 3 and a black for a 2/2 legendary creature, human cleric. Tap, sacrifice 2 creatures, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
I'd almost rather run Victimize over Whisper.
I'm going to put both in the maybe board. So Victimize is 2 and a black and does the same thing at sorcery speed.
Yes. Choose 2 target creature cards in your graveyard, sacrifice a creature. So you sacrifice 1, get 2 back.
Okay, I'm going to put both in the maybe board for now.
So my only issue with Whisper is the fact that I've tried to make Whisper work in a lot of decks I've played that had this effect. The problem is keeping Whisper alive to actually do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or to actually have creatures on the field where she can, you know, be beneficial. Because you're not going to be sacrificing your commander to her.
No.
But it's 4 mana for a 2/2, also having 2 power in play, or 2 creatures in play, also waiting a turn for a ton tap. Like,
yeah,
it's
a pretty high setup cost.
Yeah, and I think Priest of the Forgotten Gods already kind of fills that. I don't know, Whisper is super cool, but I've never found a place in her time where she works.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to move Speaker of the Heavens into the main deck for another good one-drop creature. So Speaker of the Heavens was the 1 mana where if we had 7 mana more than our, 7 life more than our starting life total, we could tap to make an angel. It looks more and more like we do have the backup plan of going wide and doing some degree of beats. It's not going to be a focused beatdown deck, but it does have that option with a number of beaters and Heliod to lean back into.
Gotcha. So moving away from the fun, spicy stuff and more to the boring, mundane stuff. Soul Ring, Arcane Signet.
Insignet, Orzhov Signet. With a 4 mana commander, we really want to focus in on 2 mana rocks. So Soul Ring, Arcane Signet, Felwar Stone.
Talisman of Hierarchy.
Yes, exactly.
Smothering Tithe.
Mm-hmm. If we're going in that direction, well, we have to go in that direction. It's just good.
Yeah. So, fun fact for those listening, Smothering Tithe is a 4-mana enchantment. Whenever an opponent draws a card that payer may pay 2, if they don't, you create a treasure token. You sacrifice it and add mana of any color. It's just good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very good.
We do then have a silly backup win condition we can do with Revel in Riches, which would kind of be fun. creatures are going to be dying in mass anyway. We're going to run a decent number of board wipes, and it is a fairly decent way to get, especially at this level with the decks that we tend to play against in our meta, there's a lot of creature-focused decks.
Yeah, we do. Like you said, some of our decks have like a 1.5 infinite combos that can just end the game on the spot, even though they're more just tuned casual commander decks, just because sometimes you want to get the game over with.
Mm-hmm.
We do try and reserve spots, though, for goofy things, such as Revel in Riches. Or, since we've got Veto, I gotta find it, but
Let me read Revel in Riches then while you find it. So Revel in Riches is 4 and a black for an enchantment. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, create a colorless treasure artifact token with tap, sacrifice this artifact, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 10 or more treasures, you win the game. And then, if we control Veto,
You have Revival Revenge. It is a split card from Ravnica Alliance. The Revival is 2 mana. It can be paid in either white or black. Return target creature card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. So it's good. It's strong. It itself can, you know, bring back any of your combo pieces. The other half with Veto, though, is Revenge, which is 6 mana, double your life total. Target opponent loses half their life rounded up.
So just kill target player.
Yes. It's technically 9 mana worth of cards. It's Veto plus this, but you can just gotcha somebody.
True.
Which is right. Better in 1v1. You should not put it in this deck, but it's
no,
really funny.
It'll go live in the maybe board. So that then takes us, I've saved the deck again, that takes us to 54 cards without our lands being counted so far. I think this deck is probably going to want to live at probably 35 to 36 lands. Looking at our mana curve, we're peaking at like 2.96 with an average CMC. This deck probably wants to be below 3 for its converted mana cost. I think this means that Ranger Captain of Eos is going to make the list. It is a tutor, but it is a fairly limited tutor for what the deck is going to do. It is also a way to back up our win condition. So Ranger Captain of Eos is 1/2 white for a 3/3 creature human soldier. When Ranger Captain of Eos enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a creature card with a converted mana cost 1 or less, reveal it, and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. We can also sacrifice Ranger Captain of Eos as an activated ability. Your opponents can't cast non-creature spells this turn.
Card good.
Yes, card is good. Okay, so looking over our numbers then, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ramp effects, 1 cost saving effect, 6 ramp effects with Smothering Tithe, 7 with Revelin Riches, 8 with Weathered Wayfarer, 9 with Land Tax. I'll call those each half of one just because they don't really get you ahead. They just let you keep up. We have, we get a little bit of mana off of Priest of the Forgotten Gods. I'll call that another half. It's not looking too bad with this mana curve.
We could use Phyrexian Altar then. It's a sack outlet and generates colored mana.
It's in my staples binder. I'm going to leave it out for now.
How about, and this isn't a, this is the opposite of mana generation, it's removing people's mana, Heliod's Intervention. It is a white and X, instant from the most recent Theros set. It has choose one, destroy X artifacts and or enchantments, or target player gains twice X life.
Yeah, I'm in for that one. It so seems like it is nice either side.
Yeah, destroys a bunch of artifacts or enchantments, that's a plus. Or mm-hmm. if you've got part of the Sanguine Bond or Veto in play, kill somebody?
Yeah, I don't mind that. This is looking pretty tight now. So we have the option to go tall. We have the potential several silly little win conditions. We have kind of the thematic cards that these black-white clerics are worshipping. We've got a dark zombie god. We've got actual gods. We got a couple of decent planeswalkers who are going to back up our game plan and be fairly effective. Are there any other Sorins who are good? Because he's classically in black-white.
The Sorin from Khan's Tarkir, maybe? Sorin Solemn Visitor?
There he is. 2 a white and a black for a Planeswalker. Sorin comes with 4 loyalty. +1 until your next turn, creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain lifelink. So classic Sorin. -2, make a 2/2 black vampire creature token with flying onto the battlefield. -6, you get an emblem with the beginning of each upkeep that player's, each opponent's upkeep that player sacrifices a creature. Eh, maybe.
So,
doesn't seem
how about,
that strong.
All right, we're talking about Dark Odds. How about D-Spark?
D-Spark is pretty nice point removal for what, a lot of what the decks this is going to go up against.
It hits every commander in our meta?
Yeah, so one and a white, excuse me, white and black, instant, exile target permanent with converted mana cost 4 or greater. It's a
food
really
chain.
Good budget removal spell.
Hits Food Chain, hits Smothering Tithe.
Does not hit Food Chain.
Food Chain, isn't it?
It's 3 and a green, 2 and a green.
Hits Smothering Tithe.
It does hit Smothering Tithe.
Hits Korvold. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I want a haymaker for the deck in terms of Planeswalkers, and I know this one is powerful from my own experience with it. Liliana Dreadhorde General.
Mm-hmm.
Card draw, sack outlet.
And actually, another Liliana that could potentially go into the deck very easily
Heretical
would
healer.
Be Heretical Healer. So Liliana, Heretical Healer, is 1 black-black for a legendary creature human cleric. With lifelink, she is a 2/3 human cleric. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, happens all the time, you exile Liliana, return to the battlefield transformed under your control, and then you put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield. Her back half, her transformed half, is the Planeswalker. She is one of the Magic Origins Flipwalkers. She is Liliana Defiant Necromancer. For her, comes into play with 3 loyalty counters on her. For +2, each player discards a card. You don't mind having cards in your graveyard. Her first minus is -X. Return target non-legendary creature card with a converted mana cost X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. And her ultimate is -8. You get an emblem with whenever a creature dies, return it to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of the next end step. Sure, all that seems fun.
Yeah, I'd say put both in. The card draw off of Dreadhorde General is ridiculous mm-hmm. as a passive. She generates bodies in her +2, giving her zombies. Her -4 is a sack outlet for both you and your opponent, and her minus 8 just kind of wins you the game.
All right, so we're coming up then on the last few slots in the deck. Currently, we have 59 non-land cards in the deck. We're going to fill out the land slots probably with some basics and some other non-essential cards to go over. One card that is kind of a silly pet card that is also a cleric is the Bad Sun Titan, Bishop of Rebirth.
I mean, why not both?
Yeah, so Bishop of Rebirth is 3/2 white for a creature vampire cleric. It is a 3/4 with vigilance. When it attacks, you may return target creature card with an environmental cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Importantly, it is a CMC of 5, so it can get back any other creature when it dies.
Yeah, it does. So the only thing that might put this on par with Sun Titan, it sucks it doesn't have the ETB trigger of getting something back.
Yeah.
However, with Aura in play, it does give you some additional Aura triggers where... Mm-hmm. Sun Titan would not.
So that then lands us at 60 creatures, 60 cards in the deck. We have a few slots left to fill out. We're probably a little bit light on ramp. Probably want
from my experience with my taste deck, they don't really need a lot in the way of ramp for.
No, we probably want just some more consistent card advantage in that case.
Like Skull Clamp?
Yeah, Clamp. Easy to get into the deck. Another sacrifice outlet, a way to draw cards. Yeah, clamps in. All right.
Bolas the Citadel?
Let's look at the mana curve. No, seriously. So when I'm looking at things like this, I want to look at my mana curve. At the moment, I'm still sitting just on the south side of 3, which is kind of where I want to aim for the deck. Bolas' Citadel is 3/3 black, and it's essentially, instead of paying the mana cost for the top card of your library, you may pay life for it. This deck can probably take advantage of that.
You'll have that in spades.
Yeah, Bolas' Citadel. Let's put that in for now. Might cut it later, but it's just such a powerhouse effect. And then you can tap, sacrifice 10 non-land permanents to make every opponent lose 10 life. Another potential way to win the game. Puts us to 303 for our converted mana cost. So the reason I keep going back and looking at my mana curve, everybody, is I don't want it to dredge too high up, because then the deck is going to really start to struggle if I'm aiming for 35 lands in the deck. At that point, I probably want like 36, 37 instead.
I don't think I've gone past 32 or 33 in any of my decks, with the exception of Omnath being a landfall, because, you know, lands mm-hmm. are good. What about Grand Abolisher? Good old, you don't play cards on my turn, cleric.
Yeah, it's just a good card. Now, on the other hand, another good cleric that we cannot run in this deck is Containment Priest. So Containment Priest would actually just exile all the cards we get back with Aura. They do not go back to hand like Scrap Troller, so unfortunately that cannot make the cut. That takes us up to a total of 63 non-land cards. It leaves us 2 slots left in the non-land, really, that we can play around with. We have plenty of targeted removal, good amount of mass removal. We got our Soul Sisters package. So one of the cards I mentioned that could potentially come over from Scrap Trawler decks is another classic, well, in my mind, a classic cleric, in Teshar, Ancestor's Apostle. 3 and a white for a legendary creature, Bird Cleric. It is a 2/2 with flying. Whenever you cast a historic spell, which includes artifacts, legendaries, and sagas, return target creature card with a converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. In terms of things that would trigger that, we have 8 artifacts, 3 planeswalkers, that is 11. Our commander is 12, Athreos is 13, Heliod is 14, God Eternal Bantu is 15, Krav and Regna are 16 and 17, Mangara is 18, Tabarax is 19, Vito is 20, Yawgmoth is 21.
Let me, Teshar, I need to learn to, where is he? There's something about his wording, I'm curious.
So whenever you cast a historic spell.
Okay, so it's cast, not play, which means the lands won't trigger it?
Correct. Lands will not trigger it.
Oh, Phyrexian Tower. You would have been mm-hmm. able to shine.
You're still very good.
Teshar would be good.
I'm kind of tempted to run maybe Carrion Feeder.
Carrion Feeder is good as a free sac outlet.
It's just another free sac outlet. It is a 1-mana card to go fetch with Ranger of Eos, so it's a limited tutor type effect. It fits into the +1/+1 counter theme, so it could have, like, the sub theme, so we can eventually beat in there with it. Takes down the converted mana cost just a hair, which makes me feel a little bit better. So that takes us to 64 cards without lands. We have a number of cards in our maybe board that could potentially go in. I like where we're at so far. So we'll wind up posting the final deck list, or the current deck list of Sacrament Trawler, as I'm going to call it. I'm going to transfer it from Archideck to Moxfield, probably later on today. So by the time that this episode goes up, you'll be able to review it. At the moment, we have some fairly heavy Soul Sisters and Life Game themes. We have a lot of board control, so we're definitely leaning more into value.
We should put the Bond combo in, I think, if we're going to lean heavily on that, because it just wins.
Yeah, I'm going to put it in for now. So Exquisite Blood is going in. I'm not going to include any enchantment tutors.
Aside from Academy Rector.
Yeah, that's the only one I'm going to include. I'm not going to include Enlightened or Mystic or Idyllic Tutor. I think I'll just keep those out of the deck, full stop. So that will allow us then to fit in a total of 34 lands, which is a little bit light. I may cut something to make room for it. It looks like we're at a pretty decent place, though. At the end, our average converted mana cost is 3.05. Our mana costs are about two-thirds white to one-third black, which is not a bad place to be for the deck. 33 creatures at the end. Non-cleric creatures, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
You could probably
That's not bad.
It's not. You could probably take out Revelled Riches if you're looking for a card we need to drop.
Yeah, it's fun, but probably not for this deck. And then that takes our average CMC to 3.02. It's not a bad place to be living.
Alrighty, and it looks like the last thing we need to cover before we can, you know, put a bow on the build is lands. So we're not going to go too crazy on it. We're going to run this many basic plains and this many basic swamps. More for just kind of the lands that kind of make the deck a bit more cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
So,
true.
I don't.
And we got a couple of options to look at here. So we already talked about Sac Atlas, like High Market and Phyrexian Tower, but there is a card from Onslaught Block which may be worth including, and that is Starlit Sanctum. This is a non-basic land that taps for colorless, comes into play untapped. You can pay white, sacrifice a cleric, you gain life equal to that cleric's toughness, or pay black, sacrifice a cleric, target player loses life equal to that cleric's power.
So it's stiff. It's definitely a fun cleric-centric land.
It's another sac outlet.
Yeah,
and it's another life gain trigger.
Yep, or life sloth trigger. So, I mean, so if you have Heliod in play and you get yourself a giant cleric, you can just kill somebody.
True. All right, so we got that. What else should we look at? What else is worth putting in here? Are there any utility lands we really need for the deck?
Westvale Abbey, I think, would be an interesting one, because it's also a sac outlet. Granted, you need...
All right.
You need
five, I think, right?
Yeah.
All right, so Westvale Abbey is a land from Shadows Over Innistrad. It comes into play untapped, taps for a colorless. You can pay five mana, pay one life, put a 1/1 white and black human cleric creature token onto the battlefield. Of note, clerics that are tokens and are not copies have a converted mana cost of zero, so they wouldn't get anything back with Aura when she dies. But if somehow you got a cleric token that was a copy of another one, I'm not sure how you would do that in this deck, but if you did, then if you sacrificed, for example, a copy of a 3-mana cleric, you can get a 2-drop back. Its other ability on Westvale Abbey, before I go too nuts being a judge, is 5, tap, sacrifice 5 creatures, transform Westvale Abbey, then untap it. And Westvale Abbey transforms into Ormondal, Profane Prince. It is a legendary creature demon. It is a 9/7 flying, lifelink, indestructible, and haste. Sure.
Man.
That seems thematic.
It seems cleric-y.
Yeah, I'll put it in there. What else? A card from the new Zendikar Rising set that I have in the initial possible pile is Base Camp. It enters the battlefield tapped, it taps for colorless, and then it taps for 1 mana of any color. You can only use this to play, to cast a cleric, rogue, warrior, wizard spell, or to activate the ability of a cleric, rogue, warrior, or wizard.
Right. Well, in the vein of specific types, you should probably do Unclaimed Territory and Cavern of Souls.
Alright, so Cavern of Souls.
Cavern of Souls is just a land. When it comes into play, choose a creature type. If you use this land to cast spells aside from that creature type, it is just generic colorless mana. Mm-hmm. If you cast a creature spell that is of the name type, generate mana of any color for that spell, and that spell can't be countered.
All right, I think that is a good choice in that case. I'm going to put that in over base camp just because base camp comes into play tapped and doesn't have the added utility of being good at paying for other spells. Okay.
And Unclaimed Territory was the other one. It is the exact same thing as Cavern of Souls, with the exception of the non-counter clause. So it comes into play, you name a creature type. If you spend mana on that creature type, it's any color. If not, it's colorless.
All right, that seems easy enough. Fairly cheap. This is not a bad one either. It's a dollar for a uncommon from Ixalan block. That's not bad.
For Cavern of Souls, it's $70 from Ultimate Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool beans. All right.
Silent Clearing, one of the Horizon lands from Modern Horizons. It's just it's the equivalent of a pain land. You know, pay one life, add a black or white to mana pool. However, it also has one tap, sacrifice, Silent Clearing, draw a card. So
yeah, I'm good with that.
So what else we got? Fetches kind of go without saying.
I don't think I'm going to run the fetches in this deck only because I'm not going to go into my staples binder for it.
That's fair. So no Scrubland either?
Nah, I don't think I'm going to run the duel either. I'm just going to bind. This one's just going to be, I want to be able to pull it out and play it.
Gotcha. How about Fetid Heath then as a filter land?
Oh, I think I got an extra Fetid Heath. So Fetid Heath as a filter land is originally from the Lorwyn block. It is a non-basic land, taps for colorless, or you can pay a hybrid of white or black. Tap it, add white-white, white-black, or black-black to your mana pool. Yeah, let's throw that in there.
Let's see, so if we're...
It takes us up to 15 lands.
All right, Bajuka Bog.
Yeah, probably just want to Bajuke somebody.
Sometimes you just have to bog someone.
Yep.
I don't think this is an Urborg Cabal Coffers deck.
I don't think it needs the big black mana. I mean, I don't think this is going to have enough cards in hand a lot of times to use it.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of this will be closer to a Meren deck, which did not feel like a big mana deck.
Gotcha. So lack of cards in hand, card draw, mana source. Castle Lockthwain.
So Castle Lockthwain was from the Throne of Eldraine set. It is a land that enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a swamp. We're probably going to control a swamp. Taps for black or pay one black and tap it. Draw a card, then you lose life equal to the number of cards in your hand. Sure, I'll be happy to run that.
I don't know if we want to run it either, but Castle Ardenvale just to create the 1-1 humans?
Maybe. I'm going to put it in the maybe board.
All right. How about the new Pathway lens from Zendikar Rising? Bright Climb Pathway.
I don't think that's one that I pulled. Certainly wouldn't object to it. I'm willing to try them out in this deck. So I don't have a way to pick up lands. But I don't think that matters too much. I don't think we run the original set of lands from this. Well, give me the Battle for Zendikar lands, which was the Shambling Vent, which was a man land, a folk land. I don't think that makes the cut for this deck. We're at 18 non-basics at the moment, which would then leave us room for 16 basic lands. Our balance would probably be like 10 plains and 4 swamps, probably 9 plains and 5 swamps.
That works, because we also, there needs to be lands you can actually get with land tax, weathered wafer, things of that nature. Any extra copies of Ancient Tomb lying around?
No extra copies of Ancient Tomb lying around.
And you can put the bad fetches in there, Evolving Wild.
I don't think they're worth the slot, in all honesty. I don't think this deck's going to be too hard up for fixing. We don't have a lot of, like, our greediest card is literally... Bolas of Citadel.
Yeah.
I don't think we need snow mana. I don't think there's any effects we're going to run with it that need snow. If we were doing a little bit more control-y and we're running cards like Withered Wisps or the Dead of Winter, I would consider it, but I think we can get away with just running swamps. Okay, so I think that covers our land package.
Yeah, that puts us in a pretty good place for lands, yeah.
All right, I think we got a skeleton for this, so I'm going to work on cleaning this up and tuning it up. You will see the final version of this linked in our spell notes. It'll be on the Gemstone Mine Moxfield account. And I hope you've enjoyed a kind of peek behind the curtains at how we like to brew our decks. I hope you found some useful tools with it. Alex, any closing thoughts on Sacrament Trawler?
Sack Trawler, as I'm calling it, because it sticks a bit closer to Scrap Trawler. Just because I'm going with it. And just because, you know, this is the skeleton we came out to, if you come across anything that you think we should know would be a good notable inclusion, please feel free to reach out and let us know. Decks like this are always looking to evolve. We keep our large stable of decks together to work on and tune throughout the course of our playing. And yeah, that's pretty much it for me.
All right, so we hope you enjoyed this episode. You can wait, look forward to hearing us, hopefully with another Jake next time, as he is probably going to stop lashing himself over that silly tortured existence play. So until next time, I'm John.
And I'm Alex.
You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG, or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.